Hi, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Lawyer Lifter Podcast. And I am really excited to just speak with our special guest here today, known on the OnlyFans platform, Harriet Sugarcookie. And really, this is just all about uncovering the myth and the mystique of OnlyFans. And so, Harriet, hi. You know, when did you start becoming an OnlyFans? When did you start with OnlyFans?
OnlyFans platform specifically, I would say I started early 2020. However, being in the sex industry itself, that's closer to 8 years, I believe.
Is that typical, you think, like with only like being in the sex industry and then just adding another kind of way to, you know, make income by joining up OnlyFans?
I believe with veterans of the sex industry, we're very used to diversifying where we get our money from. And when a platform comes with good, I would say, good ideas and a good take, then you don't really turn it down just in case. However, I think OnlyFans is very lucky in the sense that they definitely had a huge uptick during the pandemic at the very early start, with a lot of people losing their jobs, a lot of people looking for that extra income that they came from people without the sex industry experience. And I think part of that also allowed for the stigma so that OnlyFans itself became sort of like a household name, and the stigma of doing it is less so about sex work in the same way that perhaps camming is.
Yeah, so camming is first. Can you explain what camming is as it relates to OnlyFans?
So when we talk about digital sex work, there's a lot of different things you can do. Camming would be on platforms where you live stream to audiences who are there and they're chatting to you and they can tip you, much like Twitch, but sexual, I suppose.
Okay. And so that's what OnlyFans is capitalizing on.
No, I would say OnlyFans is their own different niche of platforms. So the subscription-based service model that they use isn't particularly new for the pandemic. It's just that they had the best name recognition at the right time.
Yeah.
And probably the easiest, most user-friendly interface at the time, which I think goes a long way to people adapting it in the early stages. I'm not sure how I would classify it, but I would probably say it's a subscription-based platform, because I guess with digital sex work, you have things like straight-up porn, you know, actors, actresses who get paid to do a scene by a studio or production company who then edit it and then they host it on their own website, such as Brazzers, and then sometimes tube sites such as Pornhub. And then for the sex worker in that case, then your job is the scene itself and you get paid for it and that's it. Then you have camming, which is, like I mentioned before, like a streaming live service that you can do from your home, and then you get paid whatever tips you make during that time that you're on. And then things like OnlyFans is where you can post things and you can get tips, but you don't have to be online like camming does, and you don't have to do it at a studio or a production company like porn does. So it is a very different ballgame.
And does that make it just way more user-friendly and just like easier to enter and, you know, market oneself?
I wouldn't say it's easier to market, but it's definitely easier to enter and a little bit safer too, because with things and camming to a certain degree, any job which means that you're staying at home and you're doing things on your own terms is of course going to be much safer than when you have to go meet strangers, when you have to actually interact with other people. So it does mitigate those dangers, but then there's other dangers involved as well. And these are ones that I think most entertainers face, although maybe they don't realize. But if you're, constantly filming in your home, then you have an obsessive fan, you have to make sure that you're not filming anything that has identifying in location information and things like that.
I see. And so, your prior work history, you said you were in the sex industry, and does only did you just move out of what you were doing prior and then just dedicate yourself to only to that OnlyFans platform?
So I started with posting just on online social media platforms, not even for money. It was just something that I did in the earlier years of the internet when Reddit was much more lucrative in that way. And then from there, I went to camming because I thought it would be fun. And I guess that's sort of how I took a step into sex work. Eventually, I moved up to the point that I was running my own production company in Europe. I was based in Budapest. And everything was going fairly well. I felt like I had a good grasp on what I was doing and I owned everything. And, running your own business is obviously even safer than otherwise. And then I fell in love with someone from America, gave it all up, and then came to America. And I was like, okay, this, what do I do now? Because I left everything. And that's when the pandemic hit. And then I was like, well, not much I can do. We're all stuck inside. I'm in a foreign country. Not sure if this love stuff really worked out so well. May have made a mistake. And decided to try OnlyFans because I had the time and I felt like I had the experience necessary to make it work.
And so you started in 2020, and so
Yes.
do you think that your success on OnlyFans is attributed to your past work experience?
Yes, Harriet Sugarcookie herself has a pretty well-known brand recognition within the niches. So when I tell my fans or followers that I'm on a new platform, it was a little bit easier to get, the initial turnout to subscribe and then to build on that, really. If you're someone who doesn't have any online presence without any sort of following, it can be a little bit harder because you have to market yourself from scratch. And I had, how X number of years behind me to work on with a base.
Yeah, so like what I hear this myth that like anybody really, like it, well, you heard it in the pandemic that you basically could just go on OnlyFans and then make boatloads of money. And so
You
you
can.
can.
Like, you absolutely can. I know models that I have worked with in the sense of like promotion marketing behind the scenes stuff that you, the normal audience, wouldn't see. That they don't have, like me, I have a fairly strong social media presence. I have over 500,000 followers on Twitter, that sort of thing. But I know models that make more than me that don't have any social media presence. I know one model who has never actually shown her face. And she made about 3 million last year.
So that leads me to my question, like, how do you know how to market yourself without that foundation? And you're saying you know someone who never showed her face and made 3 million last year. Like, what's the what are the like what's the secret, Like, how do you just do that?
If she would tell me, I would tell you. When it comes to marketing, there's a lot of different ways of doing it. So I can only speak from my own experiences. Obviously, I market towards my own fan base on my social media accounts. That's a little bit tricky because if you go on platforms such as Instagram, TikTok, Snapchat, it is against their terms of services and you can get banned, you can get, shadow banned or just have your account deleted. That doesn't stop people, obviously. They kind of work way around it, or they just keep making new accounts and they sort of just, I guess, come back. Twitter, however, has been pretty lenient as long as you don't, explicitly show certain things in your profile picture or header. You can put links to OnlyFans directly, and that's my favorite form of marketing through the social media platforms. Although I do believe TikTok itself is currently the biggest growing one. So if you want a lot of like followers quickly, without any experience, without any base, TikTok is probably your best bet because their algorithm really pushes new people to the front. And you can just follow the trends and just do what's trending on there. And then that way, you don't really need to have any sort of background yourself. So, as a social media platform, that is the best way to grow. And there are definitely girls on OnlyFans whose entire traffic comes from TikTok. You just have to be careful with how you post it because you can't send the direct link. So some of them use these like websites where you can put links in, and it's kind of like a middleman between the two. And then of course it is a lot of work to, make TikToks all day every day. And then if it gets deleted, you have to make a new one. And I think a lot of people see social media a little bit too personally. So when you get things taken down, it's quite a big shock, and you sort of go, "Oh, that's all my work." But unfortunately, those in the sex industry are very used to these kind of things. So you do get around that. Otherwise, you can do things such as collaborating with other models, or actors, if you so wish. So by the act of actually working with someone else and then being posted on their page when they release the content that you both shot, then people that are part of their audience are going to see you, and if they're interested, they're going to find you because you worked with, the person they were actually following. So collaborations is that way. And the person you collaborate with will also have social media presence and then post you as well. So you're kind of sharing an audience in that way and growing. Other ways could definitely include just some people just buy actual like space. So let's say you meet someone and they said like, "Okay, if you pay me X amount, I'll post about you for this amount of time." And this happens in other industries as well, but I believe it is one of the ways we use in the sex industry, at least for OnlyFans. And then there's obviously things like podcasts and getting into the news. I know tabloids often, if you look for them, they have these very trashy headlines where it's very clickbait. But if you're a model and you want to get that exposure, then you have to come up with your own rather clickbait headlines and post it and see if anyone will pick it up. Sending out to journalists, kind of like cold calling, but for
Yeah, so
tabloids.
what I enjoy about where we're going in this part of the conversation is that the busting that myth that, okay, OnlyFans is almost just like very so easy. And what you're talking about is a business plan. It's just you're utilizing a different industry and a different platform. But what I'm hearing is like a marketing plan within a business plan, and who figuring out like how does when OnlyFans invites people and the barriers to entry are so low, how do you, as someone who's new, market yourself like to get like in that to get a demographic going? When there's so many, let's just take females, when there's so many heterosexual women out there trying to capture subscribers, like what do you have to do to make it work?
You do everything that you can. There's, for instance, I personally hate TikTok. Like, I hate it with a fiery passion. But I will also like shed my pride and dignity and use it for marketing. And that's just one way of doing it. But if you truly want something, if you truly want to succeed, then you have to put yourself out there in all forms. You have to start taking chances. You start to have to look out for any chance that you can promote yourself. Oh, do I know anyone that's doing this? Do I know anyone that's doing that? I've known people that just stick their QR code in men's bathrooms to see if it works. Like, there's no wrong answer. There's people that did the plane banner, the planes that have a banner that fly behind with their actual website and OnlyFans link flying over some big games when they're being played over in LA Stadium. There's really no wrong answer to how you can market yourself. It's just how much are you willing to, first of all, not care about how dumb you look, not care how audacious you look, not care that people are going to say that it's trashy, because at the end of the day, which one do you want more? Do you want your pride and dignity, or do you want money?
So with that, since you came from the sex industry, do you feel like you have to really compartmentalize yourself? Like, okay, I'm selling, intimate parts or acting a part or, using, my looks and my charm. and compartmentalizing that, and then just thinking, you know what, like, this is a business. Like, I am just providing a service in exchange for compensation.
I think if people really think about it, that's pretty much every single job to some degree or another. I know people think of sex work as like something a little bit more scandalous, and this idea that we have to compartmentalize more than others may be true depending on your personality. Personally, I've never really had a problem with like, oh, this is my body, this is something sexual, you know. I've never really had those sort of thoughts that I think are more prevalent in America, which is very prudish to me, by the way. A lot of extreme religions that seem to seep into your everyday lives. But I mean, let's say you're young and you get your first job, you're working as a McDonald's drive-through person. Like, did you shed your dignity there? Because, you know, people look down on McDonald's burger flippers, right? They sort of go, well, oh, this is a dead-end job, but like, you still needed the money, right? And then what about people like servers or anyone in the service industry or hospitality in a shop, and then people come and they're complaining and customers are just downright awful, right? But they still have to be polite, they still have to put on an act, and they still have to be nice. And those are low-level jobs. But then if we get into the high-level jobs, let's talk about nurses and how much stress they've had during the pandemic, how much, you know, their family members have been shouting at them, and they also have to swallow their feelings to get through everything. And then if we're talking like really big businesses, then, you know, let's look at someone like Steve Jobs, who pretty much ended up wearing the same outfit for the rest of his life because it became part of his branding, part of his marketing. Maybe he didn't even like turtlenecks, but at the end of the day, that was something that he did for his work.
Yeah,
I do think people get too hooked on this idea that sex workers are somehow more salacious and it's, you know, it's more exciting because it's sex. But at the end of the day, work in itself is the selling of your body in whatever forms, whether that's, you know, your time and brains as a manager and CEO, whether that's your muscles as a laborer, or whether, you know, it's your intimacy as a sex worker. Like, that is what work is, the compensation of all of these things in exchange for money.
That is both refreshing and tantalizing to the brain. So I do thank you for that. You've talked about these stereotypes associated with sex work and, you know, OnlyFans, and you've busted that down. What about feminism? Like, what is your take on, you know, like, sex work and then OnlyFans? Is it an affront to feminists?
I think modern day feminism is very disorganized overall. I think there's too many types of feminism now that there's no real, you know, if we're looking back to when women were fighting for the right to vote, it felt very one, as in, this is what feminism is leading us to. We want the right to vote. We want these things that were very tangible. And now feminism as a word is changed so much that some people believe, you know, it's equal pay and equal rights to men. And then some people are saying it's beyond that, you know, it's like we have to do more than that. So I feel the only times that people have ever referred to me as a feminist has been for headlines, have been for, like, you know, when they needed to label something so that it sounds good, and they need to box it. But personally, I don't think I know what is feminist enough to be able to call myself one. Do I think that I get empowered through this line of work? Do I think other women get empowered through this line of work? That completely comes down to the individual and whether this sort of work brings you empowerment or not, or rather, if any work brings you empowerment, or if it's really a mental state. For me, I don't particularly, you know, I don't particularly do a scene, come out and go, phew, what an empowerment that was. But then, you know, sometimes I look at my bank account and I go, no, I'm pretty powerful today. Yeah. You know, it really depends what your classifications are and what you feel about yourself. And I think that's a lot of self-reflection that all women and men should do. But whether or not it can be labeled as such, I'm not sure. I think with sex work, there's going to be a lot of talk on you. Right, there's always going to be a lot of judgments, a lot of stigmas, and there's going to be a lot of doors closed. Unfortunately, there are things I would like to do, but because of my line of work, I can't. As an example, I love to volunteer. I really love to volunteer, especially on things that have to do with children, because I personally grew up in Vietnam at some point, and I saw a lot of orphans on the streets, and the treatment there is a lot worse than you'd see in the West. So it's always of something that's quite dear to my heart. But I also know before I even apply that I can't, right? If I wanted to apply for the soup kitchen, or if I wanted to, help at Salvation Army, I can. Those are fine. But any volunteering programs to do with children, I would automatically get blacklisted from because of my experience tied to the sex industry. So there are doors that close. And so you have to understand that when you do this line of work, you'd have to be realistic about what you're getting out of it and what it's going to cost you.
Now, I know like you are because you have a business partner and Uplift Law actually represents that other business. I know that you help others to enter OnlyFans very professionally and to treat it as a business. And that I think is so innovative and empowering to take what people think is a crude, like, oh, fly by the seat of your pants, and then legitimize it. With your experience with other women, do you have discussions with them, like if a woman is coming from a 9-to-5 W-2 position and yet wants to also put their foot into OnlyFans, like do you say like ultimately there's gonna be a point where it will be hard to maintain both?
I think for most women, once they hit a certain threshold of income from one or the other, they can decide which one's better for them. And a lot of the times, if the income from OnlyFans is a lot more, then they have the motivation to sort of quit their 9-to-5 because they're like, well, why am I working these hours when I can make the same in much less time? So why should I be refocusing on this or that? And then I do, we do have discussions on long-term success, what they can expect in the long term, where they can go from here. Because although OnlyFans can be quite tantalizing as a supplement, if you're not ready to go headlong and be like, this is what I'm doing, I'm putting all my energy in, it might not be something that you can really compare to if you have your foot on the ladder of a career in an industry that you really want. Maybe you've been working on a degree for it, maybe this is what you really want, and then you're looking at the money, and you have to just remember, like, going down the line, will you be able to get back into this other industry that you want? Because OnlyFans is very easy to jump in and jump out, and it's always going to sort of be there, or at least if not OnlyFans specifically, other platforms like that. Whereas with this other career you have going, is it just as easy to jump back in? Like, is that something that you're willing to think about?
Yeah, and the pitfalls, because there are big companies out there that impose very strict social media policies. And so to take a whiff of something as a quote deviant as social as a OnlyFans would be a huge violation of their social media policies as well.
I personally think companies going that far into social media policies is rather wrong, because and of course I don't work in a traditional job, so I think I'm allowed to have these very liberal ideas on these things without much consequences. But to me, a job is when you get paid for X amount of time, right? Like, I go into work, I do this job, or I have this project, I complete this project, and I get paid for it. So the idea that a company, any company, can monitor and then instruct you on how you act on social media or how you act in person, but you're not getting paid for that doesn't really make sense to me. Like, if you want me to act a certain way in all these hours, then pay me to act this way in all these hours. And I think that's a different conversation on just how much privacy an individual person can get. And of course, there's companies that are going to say things like, well, what if they do or say something that's going to cause harm on the reputation of the company? You've seen it where we have these videos uploaded, and perhaps someone is making a very racist remark, and then people sort of find them, and then the company drops them. Like, in those cases, you sort of go, okay, maybe that make sense, but I think there is a much larger discussion at hand on exactly how far we should be allowing companies to control our lives off the clock.
Absolutely. So one of the things that you touched on was just like OnlyFans is good to supplement, but you know, we're speaking on heterosexual women right now, but you have that conversation, which again, what's very intriguing about this is that you can legitimize your work on OnlyFans to be a business and treat it as such. Mm-hmm. So is that what you mean when women, let's say, have to think like, okay, what, how am I going to make this work for me long term? Because also they have to be in the mindset of, all right, well, you know, this is self-employment, you know, so I, and, yes. And then they have to understand, I have to pay taxes, or I have to, like, you know, pay my insurance and things like that. How do you, what do you say to these women, like, when they're just like totally high on the, wow, the supplement, and then they're like, I'll just quit. I'll just like do this forever.
Honestly, I remind them that taxes do happen and they should be paying quarterly to begin with. But at the end of the day, I don't think of any of these women as children. And I don't particularly believe it's my job to hand walk them through how to do taxes, how to save up for this, how to get insurance on. And I really don't think it's healthy for them either to be walked like that. So whilst I do recommend that they, you know, I recommend, oh, this CPA, that CPA, this person for here, this person for insurance, I don't have any sort of strict code where I go, hey, did you save this? Do you have enough to pay right now? Because I don't think that's my job. And I think for some people, that first year when they do get hit with taxes is a good dose of reality that they might need. That's a lesson that I can't teach them.
Yes, absolutely. And the importance of, if you want to long term this, make this a career, you should have a lawyer and a CPA and do a business entity.
We do recommend all new clients to open up a business, whether it's an S corp or an LLC. LLC. We do recommend that. That is one of the first things we say, like, before you get paid, open up a company and have your company paid, and that makes things a lot easier. So that is probably one of the stricter things that we recommend. But again, we don't enforce any of these things.
Yes, and one of the things that you had mentioned in the past in our other discussion was just some of the pitfalls, some of the things to be aware of, even though it is in the safety of your own home, to make sure that when you are, you know, speaking to a subscriber or whatever, or creating content, mm-hmm. that you remove identifiers. And so what is your position, or how do you advise someone when some subscriber just becomes too, you know, crazy and then lifts content and then just starts some kind of negative campaign elsewhere?
Unfortunately, there's really not much that can be done about it. From a legal standpoint, you can do things such as send DMCA takedown notices. You can like inform Google that the information that they're posting, the pictures that they're posting on such and such website, you know, is not legal. And the most Google can do in that sense is take the links away from their sites. But then the sites that are hosting it, and there are many of them, like these sites that basically are created as forums for people who are stealing content to post. Even if you send them these legal documents and saying, take this and this down, there's really not much you can do to really make them and follow them up on it. Because a lot of these websites, you know, they're hosted in places abroad, like places such as the Philippines, where legally there's not much we can do, and you're not really likely to get much from the other country's ends. And then you have to sort of think, is it really worth it to that extent? For instance, I have more catfishes than I could possibly imagine. Like every single day someone says, oh, so-and-so is using your photo, so-and-so is using your photos. I actually have, I suppose I could almost call them an arch nemesis at this point, but for the past six, 7 years, this one specific person in the Philippines has been taking my photos and pretending to be me,
Wow.
making up this whole story. They make Facebook pages about this character that they created using my photos, and they Photoshop the most hideous smile on me. And then if I ever post pictures of of a friend, like me and a male friend going out, like if or even just my partner on a date, they'll put the same post up and they'll say, "Oh, this is my fan that won the chance to, fuck me." Sorry, I'm
You
not sure if I can
can.
swear on this. Because for them, the reason they created this is because they're targeting people that think that, they have a chance with this made-up character, because this made-up character is, doing random fan fucking or whatever it is. And I've reported them on Facebook, on Instagram, and it's been going on for years. But I suppose the reason they don't stop is that I have a very they're very successful with my photos, and because I post so often on social media, there's always new content to be used. So that's probably the most malicious version of this stealing content that I can think of, where they take your content, they use it to harm others, they use it to scam others, and they actually monetize from it. Now, on the side of piracy, I've never actually been against piracy if you're consuming it for personal use. I know that sounds very strange from someone in my profession, but I feel personally that porn is a luxury, so to speak, that it's, when things are tight, it's one of the last things you spend money on. You pay your bills and you buy food
Right.
first, right? Like, porn is very low on your list of things. So it's a luxury. And there's so much of it out there for free. So I don't really mind if some people pirate my stuff just for personal use, because I make it very clear to the people that do pay that it's because of them that I can continue doing what I do. So I guess I think of my work more as a very, very loose crowdfunded scheme. And the thing is, the people that pirate your content, the people that go on these forums that specifically cater to, stolen content, that's not money you're losing. A lot of women think this. A lot of people think, "Oh my God, this video that was, pirated and uploaded has hundreds of thousands of views, that's X money to me." And I'm like, it's not X money to you, because the people viewing that would never have bought it in the first place. You're not losing money, because there was never money from those people in to begin with. So rather than, for me, focusing on this hypothetical money that I don't think was ever going to exchange hands, I'd rather focus my time and my appreciation on the people that do pay, and make them know that the fact that they pay, even though they don't have to, is letting me keep my job, letting me, live and pay my bills. And showing that appreciation, I think, is just a lot more healthier than sort of getting very focused and hurt and almost, resentful about the stolen content.
Right.
Unfortunately, that's one of the things they say about the internet. If it's on the internet, it's there forever, and there's nothing you can do. Like the NFT people who have these like non-fungible tokens, and then people screenshot their NFTs and post them just for funsies to say, "Well, it's not really yours, is it? We all have it." That sort of childish behavior is just very, very much the
Yeah.
internet.
It is still very much the Wild Wild West, and you point out that the law is very much attempting to catch up, but we are light years apart. So then, when you are doing what you're doing, and it is, let me just say, you are doing a high level form of sex work and OnlyFans because you've legitimized this into a business construct. How do you, does it mean that your partner, your husband, your spouse, or whatever really needs to be 100% behind that?
I believe so. I think for any successful, healthy relationship, these things, especially if you're a sex worker, needs to be brought up straight away. I remember back when I lived in London, I absolutely tanked a blind date that my friend set up once, because we both got to the restaurant, we said hello and stuff, sat down, and then I just blurted out, "Hi, I'm a porn star. I'm not sure if your friend told you that." And they hadn't. Because for me, I feel like when it comes to this sort of stuff, it's hard for people. Like, I can say as much as I want that I'm okay with people seeing my body, that anyone can Google my name and see naked pictures of me, and that doesn't affect me in any way. But to be able to assume that your partner would also be okay with that isn't okay. A lot of people wouldn't be. It's not normal. It's not something that we as a society have really matured enough to accept yet. Finding someone that is going to be okay with it and isn't going to be ashamed of you and is going to be supportive, whether or not they join you or they just sort of look from the side and go, okay, you're doing a great job, that you do need like that level of trust between two people if you want a relationship to work. I was with a partner before, terrible partner, I still curse him sometimes, and he always told me, I'm absolutely fine, like I have no problems, like blah 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 blah. But it was clear he wasn't fine because he never ever brought it up to his parents in any form whatsoever. If we went to visit his family, there was like a cover story, there's a, well, you don't do this, you actually do this, and if they ask, this is, and it was like this whole charade. And it's very difficult in those times to really trust a person's words that they're not ashamed of you when they go so far to make up a story for you towards their loved ones. My current partner and I, well, luckily there's a lot of things his mum doesn't like about me before I even have to give up my job, so it's not really a problem.
Oh God, this has been so hilarious, and I really, really enjoyed this conversation, and I'm so sorry.
Thank you.
Absolutely. I am empowered by having this conversation, and it is refreshing because what you're saying applies to any woman in any kind of industry who's kicking ass. There's always going to be the need of a partner 100% okay and 100% supportive. So,
I would say for any women who are interested in this, because that's quite tantalizing to have like extra income and maybe make a lot of money, definitely find someone that you may know to ask for advice for first. Anyone with a little bit of experience or that can point you in the right way. The sex industry is very, still very early days for like independent work, and there's a lot of predators out there that can take advantage of you. So that would be my one solid advice, is definitely do as much research as you can. There's subreddits with people asking questions, there's definitely forums for it, but don't go in too blind.
yes, and that leads me to the fact that Harriet, I mean, that is the other leg of your business, is that you actually have another business that does exactly what you're saying, which is to help these bright-eyed, bushy-eyed people to make this a thing, a legitimate career, and to do it safely and productively and efficiently. So,
Well, my company would be the very professional route you could take with that. There's the route that you can just research yourself and ask around, which is free, or there is the route that you can pay for a company such as mine to just make sure that everything goes 100% smooth and that you are as protected as
correct.
possible.
Yes. Like if you're really trying to go that high level, Harriet's your girl. So you guys, if you are looking for that high level business plan that Harriet was just discussing, Uplift Law does represent this business, Et2 Beauty, and that is where you want to go for any high level OnlyFans business planning, Et2 Beauty. I am so happy that you came on to this show to share thoughts about busting down these myths to shine light on feminism, as it does not, I would say, apply to this type of industry. I mean, you're right to say that feminism has become very confusing. There's so many different kinds, and ultimately, when people say, like, oh, Mel, you're a feminist, it's like, well, I don't know what that is, and I don't know if you're insulting me now.
Right. There's a lot of people that seem to use the word feminist to just mean successful women. Which seems very odd, but you know, if it's a compliment, I'll take yes. it as a compliment.
So guys, thank you so much to Harriet, Sugar Cookie Only Fans, for joining us. And check out our blog where we also talk about some of the points we discussed today. And we will catch you next time on the Lawyer Lifter Podcast. Thank you for listening to the Lawyer Lifter Podcast. You can listen to other podcasts at www.lawyerlifter.com or your favorite podcast apps. Please don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe.